Your name?
Chris Bergfalk.
And your profession?
I'm a DCPS teacher, public school teacher in the elementary schools.
And as well as a DCPS graduate.
Yes, I attended DCPS, played football for DCPS, actually, and then stayed in DCPS all my life. Went to Georgetown University afterwards, an American in GW, and am now teaching in DCPS.
And a parent of DCPS students?
I have three, one in kindergarten and two in middle school in DCPS.
So you know a little something about DCPS?
Yes.
And the District of Columbia Public Schools, what are we hearing and what do we need to know that is not being told to us in the Washington Post and in the broader media about what's happening at DCPS?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. I think the important thing is that there's a lot that's being left out in the coverage. So we can talk about test scores, you know, where, you know, the information that's being presented is very selective. And we just need the whole story. And on Sunday, we read the Washington Post's coverage that says...
I got the article right here from Sunday's June 6th. It says, "Spreading DC's money around" is a page one article. "Recent data on projects indicate Fenty doesn't favor particular awards," and it's by Nikita Stewart. And then on The Jump, Chris Bergfalk, we read that records show, for example, that predominantly black Ward 5, where we are right now, outside the studio of DCTV, received more school construction funds than any other ward in fiscal 2008 and 2009. The article continues, "According to the city's most recent data available, Wards 2 and 8 followed with $117 million, $103 million respectively." And here's the gem, "crushing the idea that when it comes to school construction, wards were when it comes to school construction, wards were favored by class and race." They're crushing that idea. So money is not following class and race. It's equally distributed throughout the cities. Is that correct?
No. And actually, what I want to say there is those numbers are true. So Ward 5 got the most dollars overall. Ward 8, the second most dollars. Ward 2, the third most dollars. Now, does that crush that? No, it doesn't. The reason is very simple. Ward 8 has twice the amount. Actually, I'm sorry. Ward 8 has more than three times the amount of square foot for schools than Ward 2. And Ward 5, I have numbers right here. Ward 2 and Ward 3 have the smallest number of facilities or size of facilities in the city. They both have less than 800,000 each square feet. Ward 8 has 2.5 million square feet, and Ward 5 has 2.1 million square feet. So we're not comparing apples to apples. I feel like it's a little bit like saying that New York City spends the same amount on cleaning the streets as Washington, D.C. does. So, you know, we have the streets are in the same kind of condition. Absolutely not. I think that a more accurate measure would be to look at the money being spent per gross square foot. And I have that, actually. The 21st Century Schools Fund produced that information. The Washington Post actually talked to them for their article. So they had that information. They chose not to use, an analysis by gross square foot. Or an analysis by pupil. Ward 8 has twice as many students, more than twice as many students as Wards 2 or 3.
Can you quickly describe who is composed? So people don't know the different wards. Wards 2 and 3, what are the demographics there? Ward 8, what's the and 7, what are the demographics there?
Sure. Wards 2 and 3 are the wealthiest wards in the city. They're also the wards that have the largest populations of white residents. So they're wealthy and they're whiter than any other ward in the city. Ward 8 is the poorest ward. Ward 8 also has the most, the largest school-age population attending public schools in the city. Go ahead.
So one would expect to see a huge amount of spending where the kids are for school spending. And yet the graph that you're about to show shows that under Michelle Rhee and Adrian Fenty, these almost 4 years now, what we've seen is a huge increase in spending in wards 2 and 3, which are the wealthier, whiter wards, per square foot, per dollars per square foot has gone through the roof in the wealthier, whiter wards and not through the roof for the rest of the city.
Exactly. And again, I think that's the way to look at the money being spent. In Ward 2, it's what's been spent in from 2007 to 2009 is $152 per square foot. That's almost three times the amount per square foot that was spent in Ward 8. Ward 8 only spent $54 per square foot. Ward 5, only $74 per square foot. But Ward 2 spent $152 per square foot. And then Ward 3 was second with $118 per square foot.
Forgetting the numbers for a second, Chris Bergfock, what does this mean? What is the effect on children of all this?
Yeah, I tell you what, that's a great, I mean, I think we talk about numbers, but it's more important, and the focus should be on the students and families in DCPS. So let's just take a look at what that means. I have in front of me a list of capital improvements in 2009. Shad Elementary School in Anacostia in Ward 7, they had improvements to their school playground that cost $36,000. Ketchum Elementary School, again, Ward 8 in Anacostia, had $39,000 spent on their playground in 2009. Marie Reed, another school, not in Ward 7 or Ward 8, but a very poor school with a large percentage of students who qualify for free and reduced school lunch, $40,000 spent. Now, let's jump to Ward 2 and 3. Murch Elementary School. In Ward 3 by the Van Ness Metro Station in Forest Hills, their playground received $1.1 million in 2009. Completely new.
How much?
$1.1 million. Let's jump again. Eaton Elementary School in Ward 3 in Cleveland Park received $1.2 million for a playground. And then look at Hearst. Hearst also, Ward 3, $1.3 million. Now, those are real differences for families, and I feel like it's disingenuous. It's disingenuous for the Washington Post to really not recognize the reality that students and their families see every day in their neighborhoods. When they hear that Ward 5 and Ward 8 had more money than Ward 2 and 3, but yet they go to these schools that don't have playgrounds, or the playgrounds are in shambles, the buildings are in shambles, there's the heat, electricity, everything is a mess. And then you see all this new construction, complete renovations, and these spectacular brand new playgrounds in Wards 2 and 3. You know, there's a real issue there. And I feel like, you know, looking at overall numbers really does an injustice to the people that live and the students that live in those wards and go to school in those wards every day.
Chris Bergfock, the money is going in a certain direction, and then as if their kids aren't doing amazingly on certain tests, then the teachers are blamed. Is this the way to view education?
No, and I that's a great. I'm glad you asked me that, Pete. That's a great point. Education reform. Education has always been about students, parents, and teachers. And years ago, that's where the focus was. When you talked about education at home, when you talked about education in your community, you talked about your teacher, you talked about your students, you talked about the community. And that's really where reform is happening. You know, we've read about these improvements on standardized tests. Those improvements, you know, we've been on an upward trend for the last 10 years in DCPS. And in fact, you know, if we look at these reading scores in 07, the increases on the NAEP in 07 were larger than these increases that we just read about in 09. It's the same teachers, though. It's the same teachers in 07, same teachers in 08, same teachers in 09. Those are the teachers that are in the classroom working with students, improving their lives, raising their test scores, and in an inner city, you know, working under very difficult circumstances. And again, education reform does not happen from the 12th floor of a glass enclosed office building in downtown D.C. It happens in classrooms all over the city every day. And what we've seen from the Post, and I think what we've seen from the Reid administration, is really a denigration of people that have committed their lives to coming to work every day in extraordinarily difficult circumstances, and in parts of the city that most of the Washington Post readership wouldn't drive through, and certainly wouldn't roll down their window or open their door. And those are the people, you know, that we need to support, and those people that we need to recognize for education reform.
The Washington Post owns Kaplan, which is a testing company, and this is an issue I look forward to exploring more in interviews to come, which Kaplan brought in $2.6 billion in revenue in 2009. So I think the Washington Post should put a disclaimer on every article and editorial that they write, that they are, in the words of Donald Graham, the chairman, a education and media company. They're making a lot of money off this. Chris Bergfalk, lastly, any final thoughts you want to have, you want to offer on the quote-unquote school reform that Michelle Rhee and the Washington Post continue, you know, week after week to tell us is underway?
Yeah, I do, actually. And I think people need to understand that, you know, we've heard about these increases in test scores, and there's a second story behind that. The demographics in DCPS are changing. In grade four, for instance, looking at the demographics in 07 compared to 09, African Americans, we lost over 600 African American students. However, we had gains in every other racial group in 09. If you look at the NAEP, there's a second story to the NAEP. And while we have had some, we have had a changing demographics. If you look at the NAEP from 07 to 09.
Can I just wonder, so you're saying black students are leaving DCPS?
I am saying that. And actually, I have the data here right in front of me. If we look at fourth grade, for instance, we see we saw 523 fewer students were tested in 07 than in 09. Now, out of those 523 fewer students, how many were African American? 581 were African American.
So all the loss that we're seeing, we're actually not seeing a loss for other races, but for black students in DCPS, we are seeing what some might call black flight.
Absolutely. And while you see that, you know, that you know, significant exodus, 581 students and an increase in every other racial group, that's troubling. In eighth grade, it's a very similar story. They about 1,000 fewer students were tested in 09 than in 07. Of those 1,000 fewer students, almost 1,100 were African American.
This has been reported. I haven't seen this at all. This is shocking.
It is shocking, and it's even more shocking if you look at who NAEP is testing. Now, NAEP is the only national standardized test. It's a test given every 2 years, and it's given to every school system, you know, in the country. So it's a chance to compare how students in DCPS and D.C. are doing compared to students in New York, Boston, even Alaska, taking exactly the same test. Now, you know, we've read about these great increases on the NAEP for D.C., and we do have increases, and we should celebrate those increases. But we also need to know the whole story behind that. We just talked about the demographics changing in D.C. What that meant was, overall, for fourth grade, you know, in 07, almost 82% of the students in 07 in fourth grade were African American. In 09, it was 77%. So we saw a 3% change in African-American students. However, when we look at the fourth grade population tested in reading on the NAEP, what we see is that for 03, 05, and 07, 85% of the students tested were African-American. In 09, only 76% tested were African American.
Now, at this point, those are just numbers, but in fact, as we dig a little deeper, we find that is incredibly significant, because the way, a fact of life, you know, because of history and the present, is that African American students test lower. So as the Washington Post and Michelle Reed's press releases say, we have made these huge increases in, most recently, reading scores on the NAEP. In fact, a closer examination shows that there are no increases at all. Instead, there are very little increases, not the 6% claimed, but instead, they're testing fewer African American students.
Yeah, I mean, what we see is we've read about this in the Post and other places. There was a 6-point increase in DCPS's reading scores on the NAEP in 2009. Now, if you look at that, you look at, you know, those increases by racial group, you see a different story. You actually see a decrease in white students. It's not statistically significant, but you see they went down by 1 point. Hispanics had zero progress, didn't have any increase at all. And African American students had a 4-point increase. So how do you add up? How do you go from no increase for a negative increase for whites, Hispanics no increase, and African Americans a 4-point increase? How do you get to a 6-point increase? You get to it by changing who is tested. And the story is that, you know, that all of a sudden we see a 9% drop for DCPS in the African-American population that was tested. Now, did DC lose 9% of its African-American students? I mean, did DC's population drop by 9% from 07 to 09? It didn't happen. It didn't happen. But it happened on the NAEP. And if you look a little deeper, if you look at the percentage of students in D.C. overall that belong to DCPS, it's a different story. So if we look at D.C. as a whole, including charter schools, in 07, 66% of the students tested in D.C. overall were African Americans in DCPS. And then if you look... in 09, I'm sorry, 67% of the students tested in 07 were African Americans in DCPS. In 09, it was only 53%. That's a 14% change in from one test to another in a 2-year period. And that certainly, DC's population did not change by 14%. It didn't.
So, and first of all, for listeners, as we sit here in the driveway of DCTV, of papers spread all over Chris Bergvock, as you go through you've just pored over the numbers for quite some time. You've testified twice before Chairman Vincent Gray and the Committee of the Whole and raised these issues again and again. And it is astonishing to hear that, in fact, what is taking place is not gains. And gains are really what the Fenty Ree team are hanging their hats on for this upcoming election. But in fact, they're doing something with the data that we're not reading about and we're not talking about, but I think we need to.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us to really be about school reform, we have to have the facts. And there has to be dialogue, and we have to include everybody. It's not school reform to selectively pick or selectively leave out information. That's not school reform. You know, that's school reform by press releases. We just can't do that. I mean, there are some good things that are happening that were happening before Michelle Rhee, and they're still happening. And we need to talk about those, and we need to look at, you know, areas where things are not happening. The achievement gap is one of them. We don't really see on the NAEP achievement gaps closing. We don't see any evidence of achievement gaps closing. And that, you know, in DC we have the white students in DC are the highest performing white students in the country. African American students in DC are the second to lowest performing African American students in the country. So we have this enormous achievement gap. DC has among the largest achievement gaps by race, between whites and blacks, between Hispanics and blacks, between poor students and not poor students. We have the largest achievement gaps in the nation. Education reform needs to focus on closing those achievement gaps. And if we have increases in test scores, we need to look at those increases in terms of the achievement gap. And what we can't do is we can't look at test score increases and ignore the changing demographics that may have contributed to that. And I think that there's some evidence that changing demographics has increased test scores. If you remove the lowest scoring demographic, from your testing pool, you're going to see an upward increase in test scores. Does that mean that school reform is effective? No, I don't think so. But we just need to be honest about that discussion. And we need to have all the facts and truly talk about school reform and not talk about school reform with spin and with press releases.
And that, again, is what you're seeing that Michelle Rhee and Venti have done, is to increase test scores by removing the lowest scoring students.
Well, there are some test score increases. So I do want to be clear about that. Students, and teachers have worked really hard and been very successful in raising scores in the city. Absolutely. Now, the size of some of those increases, I think that there is a demographic component there, that, we're really not testing the exact same demographic of students in 07 that we are in 09. And we just need to be honest about it so we can really engage in school reform dialogue and school reform and not try to sweep that under the carpet or ignore it. And on the NAEP, when you see, DCPS's African American population tested go from 67% in 07 to only 53% in 09, that's going to have an effect on your test scores. And we shouldn't hide from it. We should just come clean about it, talk about it, and let's figure out, are all students in our city really doing well? Are achievement gaps closing? Are there things that we should do or could do differently? Is the money being spent in the right way? Or is the curriculum in line to really meet the needs of all our students? Or are we really talking about, changing the demographics of a school system as a way to achieve reform?
In 2009, you were a finalist for Teacher of the Year?
Yes, I was, actually.
All right, any final thoughts?
No, I guess my final thought is that I think what we need to see is people like you, and then we need other media outlets to do the same thing, to really look at what's happening, talk honestly about it, and not tell half stories or not, try to achieve school reform by press releases. For reform to really happen, you need everybody, and you certainly need the teachers in the classroom. And I feel like that group has been excluded from the reform effort in Washington, D.C. And it doesn't make any sense to me how you can reform a school system without teachers, who are the people that actually do the reform every day with students in the classroom.
Thanks, Chris Bergfock.